Marty Moscowen, welcome to Radio Times.
Mr. Chairman and delegates, I accept your nomination, President of the United States. I do so with humility, deeply moved by the trust you place in me. It's a great honor. It's an even greater responsibility.
After a bruising primary, Mitt Romney addressed the Republican National Convention last night in Tampa, outlining what he would do if he becomes president. He talked about his marriage, his father, who was governor of Michigan and had also run for president, and his mother.
When my mom ran for the Senate, my dad was there for her every step of the way. I could still see her saying in her beautiful voice, "Why should women have any less say than men about the great decisions facing our nation?" Don't you wish she could have been here at this convention and heard leaders like Governor Mary Fallon, Governor Nikki Haley, Governor Susana Martinez, Senator Kelly Ayotte, and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice?
Women are a key constituent in this hotly contested race. He also criticized President Obama for not doing more to improve the economy and touted his experiences at Bain Capital.
The president hasn't disappointed you because he wanted to. The president has disappointed America because he hasn't led America in the right direction. He took office without the basic qualification that most Americans have, and one that was essential to the task at hand. He had almost no experience working in a business. Jobs to him are about government.
He added, "I learned the real lessons about how America works from experience." Mitt Romney said his administration would create 12 million jobs, something his running mate Paul Ryan had promised the night before. He also promised, as he has in other venues, to repeal the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Well, today in Radio Times, we talk about Mitt Romney's speech last night and the convention in Tampa. And joining us from Tampa is Dr. Seth Coffer. He is Public Affairs Chair of the Philadelphia Federation of Young Republicans in Tampa as an alternate delegate at the convention from Philadelphia's 1st Congressional District. And Seth Coffer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thanks. Great to be with you, Marty.
Nice to have you with us as well. Also with us, Carl Golden. He's a senior contributing analyst for the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy at the Richard Stockton College in New Jersey, a columnist for NewJerseyNewsroom.com. He was also press secretary for Governor Thomas Kane and also Governor Christine Todd Whitman. And Carl Golden, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's nice to be with you this morning. I appreciate your inviting me.
Absolutely. We're happy to have you both here. And Carl, if I could begin with you, how did Mitt Romney do last night when he delivered his speech?
I think he struck the note that he had to strike. He talked about what I think is the focus, or should be the focus, of his campaign going forward, which is the rather wretched economy we find ourselves in, the abysmal job creation. And he's pinned it all on the president as a weak and ineffective leader following misguided policies, which over the past 3.5 years simply have not worked. They haven't pulled the country out of the economic trough in which it's fallen. And I think that's going to be his guiding goal from now until November. I think he struck exactly the right tone.
What did you hear, Seth?
I totally agree. The convention hall atmosphere was electric last night. I hope it was conveyed through the televisions as well, but I think the convention as a whole really did what the plan was for the Republican Party, to allow people tuning in to give a fresh look at the party and at Mitt Romney, you know, without all of the flash and burn commercials and the whole summer of kind of trying to tear him down. I think the fresh look people saw what the real man is all about, and I think it's going to be a fresh campaign going forward, and I think it's going to be an exciting time.
Seth, what were the biggest applause lines in Tampa?
Well, I think you really pointed out well in your introduction. I think this is going to be a big campaign about women, and the speakers who you know, were on the stage made that point. We had a lot of strong women governors. Condoleezza Rice was a great speaker. And obviously there's a lot of major points that the delegates were looking for, but I think the big things were about the economy, creating jobs, and really talking about the issues in the campaign and not about tearing people down. Yeah, I think all the other surrogate speakers as well were making the same point, and I think it was a real clear message to the American people about what our Republican campaign is going to be about and why we need to win the White House.
And Carl, going back to you and picking up on what Seth just said about women, and clearly both parties are fighting over the female vote, such as it is. Does the Republican Party, though, have a problem with women?
Well, the polls would certainly indicate that, that there is a gender gap of some significance. And I think that the presentation last night and the emphasis on the women who are currently holding office or who have held high government positions prior was an attempt to sort of preempt what's going to happen in Charlotte next week, where I expect the Democratic convention will emphasize that what they have called the Republican war on women. I think it's a not so much a phony allegation, but I don't think it's an allegation that holds much water, particularly given the fact, as Governor Romney pointed out last night, the many, many strong women who are holding office in the Republican Party and have positions of influence and positions of leadership in the party, and I think it was a very wise move, an appropriate move for him to do that.
Going back to you, Seth, and you are a gay Republican, you're out, so that should be no surprise to anybody.
Right.
But I'm interested in, and I'm looking at the platform here, and also knowing what Mitt Romney said last night about the upholding the sanctity of marriage. The platform essentially says that it backs a constitutional amendment defining marriage as a union of one man and one woman. As a Republican, how do you reconcile that?
For me, I think gay people, we're all just individual people. I think what the Democratic Party actually tries to do is use identity politics, put everyone into a group, and then really promote that victim mentality. So I've been interviewed by a lot of people asking me that same question, how could I be a Republican? My answer is, how could I not be a Republican right now? Our economy is in shambles. It needs to be fixed. We need to have conservative economics right now to fix the problem we're in. And for me, I think it's insulting when people say that, because gay people are like everyone else. We have our own thoughts. We come from different frame of reference. So, you know, being gay is just one part of me. I'm a lot of other things, too. And I think everyone from the gay community should look at all the issues and not be a one-issue voter.
But would you like to be married?
To me, personally, that's not a big issue. I think it's more of a states issue, a states' rights issue. The word marriage, I think that's more of a religious thing. To me, the rights should be equal, and there's things right now that I'm sure both sides can agree on, regardless of who is in charge, like employment non-discrimination, partnership rights, simple things that could be done, but both sides really want to, you know, use it as a political weapon, really. The Democrats will turn out their side, the Republicans turn out their side, and we don't get anything done ever. So I think it's more of like a generational thing as well. The young Republicans, the evangelicals even, the people that I talk to, you know, they grew up with gay people. It's no big deal. I think the polls show that as well. So I think times are changing in both parties on that. And there were so many actually gay conservative events going on throughout the convention. So I really see, I don't feel any problem with the platform, or have never felt oppressed or any problems at all in the Republican Party.
Carl, do you see the kind of generational differences that Seth was just describing?
Well, historically, the Republican Party has always embraced the philosophy of non-federal intervention and keeping the federal government out of people's lives. And if the platform wanted to make the case that, as a matter of philosophy and public policy, the Republican Party stands for the union of one man and one woman as defining marriage, that's fine. I think when it goes so far as to say we should amend the United States Constitution to prohibit same-sex marriage, or we should amend the United States Constitution to prohibit abortion under any circumstance, I think that flies in the face of what historically this party has stood for. As Seth pointed out, it's a state's issue, but the states make their own decisions, which a number of them have, with respect to not only same-sex marriage, but regulation of abortion and so on. And I think perhaps putting it in a platform as a constitutional amendment may have been a bridge too far. And now, having said that, the first thing that happens once the convention is over is everybody ignores the platform. I don't know whether that's going to happen again this year, but I didn't really sort of see any benefit to the party to include those kinds of issues in the platform, as I said before, as constitutional amendments.
But does that mean that the platform is a bone that's thrown to the more conservative members of the Republican Party?
Well, the platform itself is a very conservative platform, more so than even the one enacted in 1980 when President Reagan was the nominee. It gets into areas such as supporting Second Amendment rights, which is appropriate. But then it goes beyond that and talks about opposing any effort to regulate the amount of bullets can be kept in one magazine or a rifle. I'm not a gun person, so I don't know all the details. But I think support for Second Amendment rights is fine. But I think going so far as to start singling out specific areas, I think, is a mistake. The Democratic Party also, by the way, when they enact their platform, is generally much more to the left, again, to satisfy the base constituency in their party. And they probably will go out and ignore it as much as the Republicans do. But there's no point, in my judgment, in giving the opposition ammunition, no pun intended, please, but giving them ammunition to pick apart your platform in an attempt to paint you as out of touch or out of the mainstream or too radical for the rest of the country.
And we're almost up on a break. You're about a minute away, Carl, but let me just ask you, both Mitt Romney and also Paul Ryan had said that if elected, they would create 12 million jobs. Now, that was the kind of job creation we had under President Clinton when the economy was growing at exponential rates. Can they deliver on that promise?
Well, it's certainly a noble and worthy goal. I can't quarrel with that. But I think it's going to take a Herculean effort to do it. We are in an economy now which is, by all accounts, very, very poor, very dismal. And to create that level of jobs over his term in office, should he get there, is going to require a Herculean effort, a great amount of compromise with the U.S. Congress, particularly the Senate, if it stays in Democratic hands. And I hope they can do it. I would be delighted if they could. It will be probably the most signature accomplishment of the 21st century if they can pull it off.
Well, let's take that short break. We're talking with Carl Golden. He's a senior contributing analyst for the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey. He's a columnist for NewJerseyNewsroom.com. He was press secretary to two New Jersey governors, Thomas Keene and Christine Todd Whitman. Also with us is Seth Coffer, and he's public affairs chair of the Philadelphia Federation of Young Republicans, joining us from Tampa. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
People's Light and Theater supports WHYY and presents Seven Guitars, written by Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright August Wuss. September 12th through October 7th, featuring acclaimed actors from Philly to Broadway. Seven Guitars is set in Pittsburgh, 1948, where the laughter of friends mingles with the sound of the blues. Part comedy, part dark elegy, part mystery. Seven Guitars is a sultry riff on the American dream. Tickets at the box office, 610-644-3500, or online at peopleslight.org.
I'm Jordan Morris. This week on Bullseye, I keep the chair warm for Jesse Thorne and decide to do a couple of interviews while I'm at it. Kurt Anderson and I talk about the art of creative procrastination, why a new generation is happily digging into its parents' record collections, and his new book, True Believers. That's all on the next Bullseye from PRI.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
The speeches and parties end in Tampa. The barbershop guys get ready to shape it up. We'll get a fresh cut on the big stories from the Republican convention and other news of the week next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking about last night's speech at the Republican National Convention, where Mitt Romney addressed the very enthusiastic crowd, talking with Dr. Seth Coffer and Carl Golden, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me play another clip from last night's speech where Mitt Romney talked about President Obama. Let's listen.
I wish President Obama had succeeded because I want America to succeed. But his promises gave way to disappointment and division. This isn't something we have to accept. Now is the moment when we can do something, and with your help, we will do something. Now is the moment when we can stand up and say, I'm an American. I make my destiny. We deserve better. My children deserve better. My family deserves better. My country deserves better.
And again, an excerpt from last night's speech. Seth, let me go back to you, because I think history would prove that the Republicans did just about everything they could to try to prevent President Obama from instituting his programs. Mitch McConnell wanted to make him a one-term president. He said that was priority number one. How do you understand what Mitt Romney was saying last night?
Well, in terms of what you're saying about Mitch McConnell, I think every Republican elected official would say that about a president. You know, you want to defeat them in the next election. I don't think that's anything new. I think it takes leadership. And, I mean, just for an example, let's say Hillary Clinton was the president. I don't think she would have gone 4 years without talking to the leaders in Senate and Congress on the Republican side, without making deals and really leading to bring something together and happen. I think it's actually a failure in leadership that has put us in this situation. And, I mean, even Democrats, I think, are agreeing that Obama's policies have failed. Democrats running in certain states aren't even attending the convention next week, the Democratic National Convention. So, I mean, I think he's, it's not just Republicans that are saying this. And if you look at the polls, too, independents by a large margin are backing Mitt Romney. If I can go back to one thing from earlier, we talked about the women's gender gap. I think in this election, the polls I've seen, there's actually a male gender gap, a huge one, bigger than the women's for Romney for men. And I think we're fighting on the Democratic turf, going after the women, where traditionally there is more of a gender gap, but men are fleeing the Obama campaign.
Carl, let me get you in on the conversation. And looking at the president's relationship with Congress, with the leadership in Congress, and again, quoting Mitch McConnell, his goal was to defeat the president. Mitt Romney says he wished the president had succeeded.
I sort of talk about damning with faint praise, I guess, but those kinds of tensions between the White House and the Congress historically have existed. You have divided government, one house of the Congress by controlled by Republicans, one house by Democrats. The White House had to know that, particularly coming off the 2010 election, when the Republicans made enormous gains, and many of them coming from more conservative individuals, many of who attributed their election to the Tea Party movement, perhaps not totally, but in some measure. And the White House had to know that they were facing some very difficult times coming off that election. I think that the president could have been, and probably should have been, a bit more forceful and politically more forceful, and gotten people into the room and laid out the problems for them, and pushed his agenda a little bit more forcefully than he did. He allowed the Republican House to pretty much control the agenda, with one or two exceptions, and he was unable to get his program through, although he had the votes in the Senate to do so. So that I don't think he dealt with the normal political tensions that always exist in a situation like that and in an environment like that, and I don't know whether that's a failing on his part, a failing on his staff's part, but that they should have recognized that going in, and should have been able to deal with it more effectively.
Seth, this goes back to the primary, and it was, I would say, a pretty bruising primary. There were a number of candidates who really roundly criticized Mitt Romney, whether it was for Bain Capital, for a whole host of other ideas, even accusing him of flip-flopping on key issues to the Republican Party. Do you see Mitt Romney as a conservative, as a moderate, as a mix of the two?
I think Mitt Romney is a conservative, but I think he's also practical, and he's someone who brings people together, and he's a leader, and that's what you need as a president. I think he's probably the most qualified person to ever run for the presidency with all the business qualifications, running an Olympics, and all those little stories that you heard of families that he's helped without any recognition, and children with cancer helping to write their will, premature babies where he was the clergyman helping a family cope with that, and during his campaign took time out to call the family when, unfortunately, she had recently passed away. All those stories are things that just show his character, and a man that is extremely qualified and will make things happen, will talk to the congressional leaders, and will get people in a room like a business and make things happen to improve the country.
Carl, is having business experience, is that a credential to run the country?
Well, I think it's one credential, certainly. And I think it's something that obviously Mitt Romney has made the center point, the centerpiece, I should say, of his campaign. He has enjoyed great success as running Bain Capital. He has turned companies around and made them viable and created jobs in those companies. And the downside is that there are some companies that failed despite his efforts. But that's the nature of venture capital. That's why it's called venture capital. No one succeeds 100% of the time when they're involved in that. So I think his successes speak pretty loudly to his leadership, and that certainly is one of the things that he can bring to the White House should he be elected.
But looking at
Marty,
go ahead, Seth.
If I could just say, he was in one of the most Democratic states when he was governor, and he made it happen with Democrats. President Obama had a Democratic Congress for his first 2 years and a filibuster-proof Senate and couldn't even get agenda through besides Obamacare.
Seth, I have to stop you there because if you look at the first 2 years, whether you like it or not, the president working with Congress was able to get through much more than just Obamacare.
Well, I mean, and we should have had to focus on jobs at that time. I think a lot of
that was part
of
the stimulus was to create jobs.
Right, and I mean, we also now have the weakest economic recovery since the Great Depression, so obviously it was not the right stimulus package. It actually, if you break it down, it's kind of a political payout to more of the liberal side. The lobbyists and some, there's a lot of people that he asked for advice for, and a lot of these jobs were not sustainable jobs and were short-term things, and that's why we're in such a weak recovery now.
Carl, I noticed one thing that Mitt Romney did not do last night, which was really talk in detail about his experience as governor of Massachusetts, including his support for, he signed the health care bill there, which by all the accounts that I have read, most people in Massachusetts are very pleased with, as it's called, Romney Care.
Well, that's true, and I have been of a mind from the very beginning that engaging in a debate over a complex issue like the differences between Obamacare and Romney Care, such as they are, if there are major differences or minor differences, I think engaging in that debate is a mistake. He obviously has made no apologies for what he did in Massachusetts. He's pointed to his successes up there. He's made the case that it should be up to individual states to decide for themselves, as he did in Massachusetts, how to handle the health care issue rather than have the federal government impose it as Obamacare does. And so I don't really fault him for staying away from trying to debate the subtlety and nuance of the differences in health care issues or in health care programs. Elections are not about subtlety and nuance, and they never have been. Elections are oftentimes chaotic and sort of messy affairs where the best messages are the simple, easy to understand. I have solutions to what ails the nation, particularly with respect to the economy. The current occupant of the White House has failed, and it's time for a change. I think he's better off sticking with that message.
Well, but what's interesting, and just a quick follow-up there, Carl, is that the mandate, which is, of course, the centerpiece of the Affordable Care Act, was a Republican conservative idea not so long ago.
Yeah, indeed it was. It goes back, I don't know how many years, but the Heritage Foundation, I believe, was supported it. Newt Gingrich, I believe, at one point supported it. So I don't think it's so much the question of the mandate in the abstract. I think it's so much a question of how you enforce it. Whether it's a tax or a penalty, depending on your definition of tax and penalty. So again, this I think is the danger in having a debate on section 4 subparagraph B point A of a 3,000 page healthcare law. So you really cannot make your case by getting down so far into the weeds on that. And I think that the Romney people understand that, at least I hope they understand that, and don't allow themselves to be maneuvered into a position where they are engaged in a debate that most people don't understand, and it's one of those, my eyes glaze over kind of debates.
That's Carl Golden joining us today on Radio Times as we talk about last night's speech by Governor Mitt Romney, and also talking about the Republican convention in Tampa, Florida. Seth Coffer, we have to say goodbye to you, but I thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. He's public affairs chair of the Philadelphia Federation of Young Republicans in Tampa as an alternate delegate to the Republican National Convention. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Gary from Hamilton, New Jersey to join us. And Gary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm one of the truly undecided voters out there. Now, this is exciting for me because you have someone from the Youth Center as a guest, and I've been a frequent candidate for political office. My last name is Stein. In 2010, I was the congressman's chief opponent. My question, follow this progression. I'm an office cleaner.
Gary, if you don't mind, only for the sake of time, if you can ask your question,
sure.
That'd be great.
Okay, fine. I fell asleep during Romney's speech, half of it. I understand from listening to BBC World Tonight coming home from work that he mentioned Iran. So my question is, what was the point of mentioning Iran at a speech at the Republican convention so close to the election? Will that encourage Israel to then attack Iran? Romney's not president yet, but it's so close. And is that a signal to them, a green light? And what is Romney going to do about it? He's not even president if he's ever going to get elected.
Okay, you asked your question. Fair enough. Let me give Carl Golden a chance to respond to that. He did talk about Iran. He criticized the president for a number of foreign policy issues, basically saying that the president wanted to talk to Iran. He didn't talk about the sanctions that have been applied on that country, but nonetheless, troublesome developments in and around Iran. Your thoughts?
Well, it is an issue, and it's an issue that's constantly out there. And I don't know whether I don't recall Governor Romney laying out any kind of plan to deal specifically with Iran. But it is an issue he's going to have to address. You know, when you're in the White House, you are not just the leader of the country; you're also the leader of the free world, and people look to you for solutions to very, very difficult diplomatic problems. I don't think that the country is ready for a war in Iran. I don't think anyone wants that. I don't think Mitt Romney wants that. And I think he mentioned it simply because he would be able to make the case that I will do some things differently. Mm-hmm. I will urge either greater sanctions or more diplomatic pressure to resolve the issue.
Let me get Annie from Scotland to join us. Annie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Let me say first that I'm a woman and a registered Republican.
Okay, fair enough.
One of your guests said that we saw and heard, quote, the real man, unquote, last night. Well, if so, he remains in my eyes and ears one of T.S. Eliot's hollow men. But my question concerns jobs.
Yes.
As a matter of interest, does anybody know how many jobs Mr. Romney created on his watch, and how many were lost? If the guests don't know, how can I find out?
Well, Annie, what I have...
And I will take my answer off the air, obviously.
Well, thank you for calling in from Scotland. And what I have heard, I think this comes from the Romney campaign, is that he created 100,000 jobs. But what we don't know, Carl Golden, is how many jobs were lost under Bain Capital.
Yeah, I do not know. I don't have that information.
But do you think the public should know? I mean, if and Mitt Romney talked about jobs, the president talks about jobs. Obviously, we need jobs. Should there be more detail from Mitt Romney about how he would create jobs?
Well, I think you're apt to hear about his time at Bain Capital more than you've already heard about it, in terms of job creation and in terms of any job loss that might have occurred with. From companies that were either closed down or went bankrupt or whatever. And I also think as the campaign unfolds, you will see Mitt Romney put a little more flesh on the bones and start talking about the kinds of policies that should be followed to create more jobs, whether that's more incentives through the tax code, whether that's using the tax code to encourage greater private investment, or what it is. I think it'll reach the point where he's going to have to do some of that, because I think the Obama campaign will press him on that point. And at the same time, he's going to be in a position to press the Obama campaign on what he sees as their failures to do much about that.
Again, we're almost up on a break here, about a minute or so, Carl. But going back, and I know one of the themes of one of the nights in Tampa was that the theme of "We Built It." Essentially, I have to say, misrepresenting what the president said, but nonetheless, the idea of individualism, the idea that entrepreneurs, you know, create their own success. When you look a little bit deeper, you see not just that the roads were built by government money or bridges, but also that companies got government contracts, they got special taxes in order for them to be able to grow their businesses. Is it time to move beyond this public-private debate over building jobs, creating jobs?
And I don't want to have my friends in the Republican Party criticize me for this, but I didn't really think that the "We Built It" slogan was one that was going to resonate very well. It comes off a remark that President Obama made, and that some folks took out of context. You can make the argument that it was distorted. I don't think it was a slogan that really is going to move a great many people. I think more to the point is a recognition that government does have a role to play. It's always had a role to play. Governor Romney made that point in his speech last night when he talked about creating 12 million jobs. What's going to take federal intervention and federal programs to help create those jobs. Now, yes, someone who's started his own business in his garage, you know, making widgets and selling them, he can make the claim that he built his business. But there is also...
Hold on to that thought. Only sorry to do that to you, Carl. We are up on a break, and we'll take that break and then come right back. Stay with us.
A stroke can rob us of our ability to speak, to move, to understand. The new Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital uses an interventional approach to the rapid treatment of stroke and aneurysm. Formed in collaboration with stroke experts from Jefferson's Faculty Practice Plan and the Jefferson Neuroscience Network, they use minimally invasive techniques to avoid open brain surgery, to prevent disabilities, and to save lives. The Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital supports WHYY.
Beautiful dream.
Actor Jack Black is best known for his comic, bombastic performances in films like High Fidelity, The School of Rock, and Nacho Libre. In the film Bernie, which just came out on DVD, he plays a kindly small-town funeral director with a lovely voice who commits a murder. Jack Black talks about his movies and music on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Mitt Romney hits the campaign trail as the official Republican presidential candidate. The Democrats hit the road for Charlotte. And as focus shifts to North Carolina, author Ron Rash will give us a primer on the state his family's lived in for over 200 years. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking about this week's Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida, and last night's speech by Mitt Romney, talking with Carl Golden, senior contributing analyst for the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy. That's at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey. He's also a columnist for NewJerseyNewsroom.com. I should add, a press secretary for Governor Thomas Kane. It is Kane, right?
Yes.
Oh, good. I know there's some back and forth about how to say his last name. And also Governor Christine Todd Whitman. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Carl, I had to interrupt. Do you want to just finish your thought there? Or are you done?
Now, the idea that there can be job creation without any sort of government involvement is simply not the case. Government, when you talk about public-private partnerships, well, the public in that is the government. It's a little hard to get up and talk about creating 12 million jobs without conceding the point, or at least making the point, that there has to be government involvement at some level, in some measure, to do that. I think the quarrel that Governor Romney has is that President Obama thinks that the federal government should be the job creator and have all those jobs come at the public level, whereas he, Governor Romney, is of a belief that it's the private sector that drives the economy, not the public sector.
And the arena built with public funds. We should just add, just to underscore that. Let me ask you, Carl, and there was this big question who this surprise guest was going to be. It turned out to be Clint Eastwood. And I have to say, one of the strangest performances I have seen at a convention, at a wedding, you know, at a public event. What did you make of his speech last night, such as it was?
I don't know. I'm one of those people who sort of tend to minimize the involvement of celebrities, whether they're movie stars or singers or entertainers at some level. On both parties use them either for to attract attention or to raise funds. So I really don't think that Clint Eastwood's appearance at the Republican convention is going to sway very many people. I think it was an effort to sort of thrill the audience and impress the delegates with a movie star. He sort of rambled a bit, and you know, he's sort of off script, I guess. But I don't think it's going to have any impact at all.
Well, let me get Scott Huffman to join us on Radio Times. He's a professor of political science, directs the Social and Behavioral Research Lab at Winthrop University. That's in Rock Hill, South Carolina, directs the Winthrop Poll. And Scott Huffman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's always great to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. I know you've had a busy morning, and it looks like you want to weigh in on the Clint Eastwood performance last night.
It was a distraction. You know, I was only just able to hop on, so I'm not sure what all has been covered. But, you know, it's Clint Eastwood's performance last night shows why this man, who is an incredible actor, maybe should continue to work from a script, because I think it threw some people off. It was a bit of a distraction, but in the end, it didn't really hurt Romney, except to the degree that people are talking about it instead of Romney's speech.
Nikki Haley, the governor of your state, spoke earlier in the week. I guess a rising star within the GOP. How did she do?
She did very well, especially for herself nationally. What folks don't really tap into that much is there's a big difference to how she's viewed inside the state and outside the state. There is a cliche, it's overused, but it's still true. South Carolina politics really is a blood sport. And here in South Carolina, she's much more controversial. She's very much a lightning rod, even within her own party. I mean, they're, you know, the last ethics accusations that were hurled against her and she was exonerated of were hurled not by Democrats, but by Republicans. And, you know, there's been a lot of fights between her and the Republican legislature, and of course, you know, the Democrats don't exactly love her either. So she's very controversial in the state, but outside the state, there's none of that. You know, most people don't really know about the ins and outs of dirty politics of other states. So what they see is, you know, her, you know, youngest governor, first female governor, first minority governor here in South Carolina, breaking all of these barriers. She's got an interesting life story, which she toured around the country with, her book tour. She's given this slot. She's made the Sunday talk show circuit supporting Mitt Romney. So a lot of folks, and the Vogue layout, don't let me forget that.
Oh, of course.
So a lot of folks are seeing, an up-and-coming rising star. And it definitely, I think, raises her stock nationally, especially among the Republican faithful. But, you know, there's nothing new that the folks in South Carolina saw. A lot of what she said has been her regular fodder for her stump speeches here in South Carolina. So the needle wouldn't have moved here, but I do think it moved nationally. I think she helped herself.
Carl Golden, let me get you back into the conversation. We actually did a show earlier this week about Chris Christie's speech at the Republican National Convention. Anything you want to add to what Scott Huffman was saying, or even add about Chris Christie's speech?
Well, first off, Nikki Haley's situation is not something peculiar to South Carolina. Governors have to deal with the nitty-gritty of everyday street-level politics. So in their states, their respective states, they're viewed much differently than they are nationally. And so I agree that she probably helped herself, and that she is more of a national figure who's gained national recognition, just as Chris Christie has. When he comes back to New Jersey, I think he's back now, but when he's back in New Jersey, he then now has to deal with a legislature controlled by the opposition party. He has to deal with the more or less parochial issues that occupy a legislature and occupy a governor. The national reputations of individuals like Governor Haley and like Governor Christie are very much different from the views that people have of them at home. I thought that Governor Christie's selection as keynote speaker was appropriate. I thought his speech, while it drew a fair amount of criticism for being perhaps too self-centered as opposed to more of the red meat kind of speech that keynote speakers are supposed to be doing. I don't think that he hurt himself by that. I think he gave the speech he wanted to give. It's a speech that was vetted in advance by the Romney campaign people. So they knew what he was going to say. So I think that any criticism that comes back is criticism more of style than of substance.
I do want to get to our callers, but Scott, I need to ask you one more question about South Carolina. Newt Gingrich won the primary in South Carolina. How do you think Mitt Romney will do in your state?
Well, South Carolina is not about to turn back to blue. The solid Democratic days in South Carolina for the presidency were gone a while back, and it may take decades for South Carolina to become competitive again. Although every South Carolina Democratic operative will tell you different that they can be competitive. I don't foresee South Carolina going for Obama this time around.
Let me get Armand from Yardville, New Jersey. Armand, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Nice to chat with you again.
Thanks.
I'd like to have your guest address something that's kind of bothering me, and that is this. The Romney-Ryan campaign seems to have made the major assumption that Mr. Romney's background in business and is an outstanding qualification for president. I'm not sure I agree with that. In fact, I think I don't. Here's why.
Okay.
Does this mean necessarily that perhaps Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or even Lee Blankfein might be a better candidate? Or does it mean, if we look back even farther, that Andrew Carnegie or J.P. Morgan would have been some of the most outstanding presidents in history? I just can't buy into this, and I'd like your guests to comment. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. Scott, I talked with Carl and our other guests about this earlier in the show about Mitt Romney touting his business credentials. Does that qualify him? I put this to Carl Golden. Does that give him special qualifications in today's tough economic times?
Well, a lot of voters are going to think so, and that's really what matters the most. What it takes to be a business leader and what it takes to govern are often very different things, because as a business leader, a CEO, when you point, things get done. When you're president, when you point, you have to then reach your hand out to Congress and say, by the way, will you give me money to do that? So governing is very different than being a CEO, but especially in trying economic times, folks are going to look to somebody who's been successful in business. And again, most folks do not fully understand how politics and government works, but they see the veneer of success. And so for a lot of people, whether it's correct or incorrect is moot. For a lot of people, that will be seen as an important qualification.
And Carl, I know we touched on this earlier. I think what can complicate things is that Bain Capital was there not specifically to create jobs, but to create profits for investors and for the company, totally appropriate in a capitalist society, and that the jobs are a byproduct of decisions made by Bain Capital.
Well, first off, the old cliche about, why can't government run like a business? Government cannot, it never has, and it never will run like a business, because businesses have profit motives, government does not. Government is drenched in politics. The business world is not. So the idea that Mitt Romney can come in and run government as if he ran Bain Capital, I don't think Mitt Romney believes that. His background in business is helpful. It's a qualification. I don't think it's the major central qualification, but it's certainly an important one. I think that people look at it, as you other guest said, people look at it and say he has enjoyed success in the economic landscape and being able to change the economic landscape and being able to deal with it. And I think that when he goes to the Congress and says, here is what I want to do to create jobs, he has to be able to make his case, and he can make that case a little more compellingly by drawing on his private business experience.
Carl, should he have or should he release his tax returns more than the year and a half that he's done?
I am of a mind that he should, and I think it's getting late in the game now, because if he does it now, it's going to look like he did it under intense pressures. I think he should have done it early on, throw them all out there and say, here, you probably have to hire an accountant to understand what's in them, but here they are, look at them, pick them over, and whatever, and within 48 hours, I think the issue would be dead.
Let me get Jay from Baltimore to join us on Radio Times, and Jay, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the time to speak. I'll be very brief.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that, I understand that politics isn't a fair game, but I think that President Obama, what he really did was bring what was already our debt, he just actually put it on the books. So in the, Paul Ryan spoke in his speech about the $5 trillion in debt. I mean, this is coming from unfunded wars. This is coming from, from the unfunded tax giveaways that were given to not just the richest of Americans, but to everyone. And I think President Obama put it on the books, and now he's being blamed for all of it. And if I could just make one other quick point. Also, Paul Ryan said that that President Obama hasn't done anything to address the economy. Yes, he has, by educating young folks and by addressing, which is the largest and biggest problem we have, which is health care. If you get those two things under control, then I do think that progress will come that things will get paid for.
Okay, Jay, thanks. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Scott, can I toss that down to you? And clearly there are concerns about the deficit, but also when you look at putting together the Bush-era tax cuts, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the economic downturn, TARP, Fannie and Freddie, and some of the other recovery issues, all of that together has created the debt deficit that we face today.
Yes, and your caller brings out a great point, because that's going to be a dichotomy. The people who are devout Republicans are believing that, Obama created all of this. The Democrats are saying, listen, he walked into this huge mess and had to begin fixing it. And the real question, at least in my mind, is can Obama run a campaign where he lays blame for this at Bush's feet or the previous administration's feet and focuses on his struggle to get out of it? And the answer is possibly, because there's been some new polling data out where, people were recently asked who's really to blame for the debt. And a majority of people, if I'm remembering the numbers correctly, still laid blame at Bush's feet rather than Obama's. So, and that obviously wasn't true for the Republicans. but it's very true for the Democrats. It's somewhat true for those in the middle. So I believe Obama may be able to run on that. It's getting hard, but there is some there. I think he can make that into some important campaign pushes.
And about a minute before we have to say goodbye, Carl, do you anticipate a bump for both candidates?
Actually, if there's going to be a bump, it's going to be a relatively small one. This race, according to all the polling data I've seen, is still a toss-up despite everything that's been everything that's gone on. I don't think either one's going to get much of a bump coming out of it. I still think this is down to a half a dozen or so, handful of battleground states, swing states. I think it's going to be a very, very close election. So whatever bump they get, I don't think is going to be reflected very much in any of the polling data.
And Scott, final word, do you see this as a close and contentious election?
Oh, it'll be very close. A lot of the models for 538 are still giving Obama a little bit of an edge, not a literal toss-up. But when it comes down to counting votes in the states whose electoral college votes matter the most, it's going to be incredibly close.
Well, on that note, Scott Huffman, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And Carl Golden, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
A pleasure to have you both on. And earlier in the hour, I spoke with Seth Coffer. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Do stay with us for the second hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.